Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
GQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
Well done, well done. See, I don't even, folks, I don't even argue anymore that it's not an intruder. The man's doing his job, and I'm grateful, and I'm proud of him. Welcome back once again to Madam Perry Salon. I am your host and cruise director, Madam Perry, also known as Jennifer Perry, and so happy to have you here tonight. As you know, we've been having so many fun shows lately. If you're listening live on Blog Talk Radio, if you would, please click the follow button if you haven't already, and be a follower. As you know, you can also subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. And when I have subscribers and people that download shows, which are always free to download, it lets me know what kind of guests you like, who you enjoy most, who you want back, and it also helps people who are considering being sponsors for Madam Perry Salon know what would be a good fit for them. Recently, God, this has been such a fun ride. If you've been listening a lot the last few months, I've had so many delightful guests. I had Rudy Sarzo. You know him as bass player for Blizzard of Oz, Quiet Riot, Whitesnake, and others. And we talked about his book Off the Rails on tour with Ozzy, with Blizzard of Oz, and the death of his friend, guitarist Randy Rhoads. Also, he's an animal activist, he and his wife out in L.A. That was a pretty cool show. Also, we had historian and political author Harvey J. K. talking about his book, The Fight for the Four Freedoms, and we also had another guest co-host with me that night, Randy Blazak, who's the director of the Hate Crimes Research Group in Oregon, but he and Kay had a lively discussion about Thomas Paine. Where do you get metal musicians and historians who both want to listen to the other show, but Madam Perry Salon. And coming up soon, I'm going to have got a lot of musicians lined up and some good authors. I've got Chasm Sultan, bass player you may know from Utopia, Todd Rundgren, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, Celine Dion, Meatloaf. I've been a fan of his for a long time, but he's also got a good body of work of his own and has a new CD. We're going to have Greg Dybeck the same week as Chasm Sultan, the 24th and 25th. He's the managing editor of Elite Daily, and he has a new book called The Art of Living Other People's Life. It's just come out last week. I've read it. It's great. And tonight, you know, the best thing about this is that I get to have the most fascinating people in the Madam Perry Salon to bring to you. And tonight I have two guests. One has been here before and got quite a lot of feedback. It's great. The gentleman has been here before. He's formerly a teacher and professor. He achieved popularity in the Atlanta film community after writing The Grand Prince of Moscow. Now, he's known for his somewhat twisted, honest, and sensitive issues-driven scripts. And he wrote a dark comedy TV series, somewhat in an attempt to escape the world of background acting, but also as a statement. He played the lead and has proven himself an exceptional actor, nominated for Best Actor in the Atlanta Independent Film Festival, where the show won an award, as well as in L.A.'s Indie Fest. And that's what he was here to talk about last time, was 64-8. And I'm talking about Edward Reed. He was here with his partner, Ryan Monolopoulos, his partner in 64-8, the show about comedy, the life of background artists, brothers and sisters. I've done that gig before, and I'd probably be happy to do it again, but it's so true. It's like it's another world you can't imagine. But he's got several things he's worked on since then. I don't know when this man sleeps, but he's got a new he's making a trailer for a new feature coming out. I can't wait to see this. It's called Lighten Up Jack Kopecky, where he's the co-writer, co-producer, director, and actor. It's a black comedy, which I love, about the life of a man where everything goes wrong. Again, I can identify. So, and he brings with him tonight. Well, first of all, I'll let him come on to the beaded curtain and then have the lady come in a second. Edward Reed, come on into Madame Perry's salon. You've been here before. You know the way to the beaded curtains and to the big cushions?
Oh, yeah. Yep. I'm so glad to be back, too.
Well, I'm delighted. You know, we had to redecorate because we had a couple of thriller writers on. One was say what's his name. It'll come to me later, and I'm so sorry if he's listening right now. He's an attorney and thriller writer living out in Reno, Nevada, and I think he and his friend hid some burritos in the cushions, but we got all that out, and it's all clean. You can tell it smells so much better. So find a nice cushy seat to sit. Okay, and I'm also delighted, standing on the other side of the beaded curtain waiting to enter is the lady who's, I think she's described as a bemused bohemian, currently earning a B.S. in film and digital media at the University of Georgia. She's an actress, screenwriter. She enjoys, she's a creative consultant and producer at Vaslav Entertainment, and she enjoys horseback riding and relaxing to heavy metal. I should have had her. She should have been here with Rudy. The fabulous Madeline Pearson. Madeline, come on into Madame Perry's salon and welcome.
Well, hello. Let me just walk right on in here.
Thank you so much
for having me. Sit down.
I'm glad. Haven't found the nice cushion. Some of these, you know, I didn't know if you were warned about the lovely Moroccan design here in my genie bottle, but I found
that
it
is
a warm,
completely
a warm
my style.
Oh, wonderful. I wanted you to feel welcome and comfortable.
Yeah, I think I'll take the purple pillow right here.
Oh, good. All right. Well, I'm so glad, Edward, to have you back. I'm so glad that you're introducing us to Madeline. And I don't know if I should first start off with where you've been recently or
I guess we could do that. We finished 64 over 8 with Ryan, and that one sold out. We had a premiere at the it was a Landmark Cinema, and no seats left. It's doing really well. We're pitching it in January. They're having the Georgia Entertainment Gala coming up in February. And we've been nominated for Best Series, so that's good. Won a couple awards. Yeah, so that's going really well. We're looking forward to making more on that and pitching that. So that's what you're making it and doing all that. That's the, I would say, it's very difficult part, but the hardest part would be pitching it and finding someone to pick it up. So that's what we're working on. In the meantime, I did another one, The Meaningful Life of Art and Henry, which was a short film, and now I'm working with Madeline.
Okay. Well, now, how did you and Madeline meet?
Madeline, do you want to go for that?
Sure. It was kind of funny. Actually, I was active in the acting game long before I decided to make my major film and digital media. And I think it was at a Get Connected event in Atlanta, probably like 3 years ago now. And I actually dropped off my headshot and resume to Edward and to his partner who was working on Grand Prince of Moscow, Kevin, and, had a short little interview with him, got to meet him for the first time, never heard back, which obviously in the industry that's not personal, you know, if you don't get a call back. And then we stumbled across each other at the Film Bar Monday event one time. And we were like, I auditioned for you. And he's like, yeah, you did. Just started talking from there and realized that we both have the same kind of messed up sense of humor and writing style. And it's just been like clockwork from there.
Yeah, it really blossomed, and I'm really grateful that I met her as well, because, like you said, there's so much going on, and to find somebody who's so creative and a little bit dark as well, I was glad to bring on a co-writer, which I've never done. This is my first time, so.
Oh, is it? Okay. Well, now, is it, I understand, yes, you would have to have people with the same or some of the same, I don't know if you say sensibilities or same likes or same afflictions. I don't know. But at the same time, does it help to have some differences in the way that you work?
It does. Yeah, yeah.
I would
it
say
does.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Edward might be, even though we're both creative, Edward is kind of able to take an idea and run with it really quickly and, you know, embellish it and expound upon it. And I'm kind of the one that's able to say, all right, you know, let's bring it down to earth a little bit more. You know, this is what we want, but what is possible? So I think I might be a little bit of the voice of reason. And then in turn, you know, Edward's able to take one of my ideas and I feel make it even better and more interesting. So two sides of the same coin, I guess you could say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I know it like my good friend Kenya Colbert, if you've been on the show, you know her. We do a lot of things together or put together a lot of projects. And I always say she's the nice one. I don't know why she's such a good friend of mine. You know, I'm the crabby one. She's the nice one. But we have to pull different sides of a thing together. But, So what is it? How long have you each worked in the Atlanta area?
For me, it's been about 3 years that I've been doing this. And like I said, it just kind of blossomed from being an extra. And I thought there was a lot of possibility in Atlanta, a lot of things going on, a lot of collaboration, and just writing a creative script, which was a little bit different than, you know, there's a lot of fan films or horror or something like that. I think something a little bit... more in depth or and this is all in my opinion, but more of an existential type script with the Grand Prince of Moscow, and that really took off. So from there I've been doing it about 3 years now. So
all right. And Madeline?
Well, for me it's been about 3 years as well. I just kind of got involved in a different way. Edward got involved through being an extra, and I kind of have the more academic route, focusing on screenwriting and the like. But really, you know, that there's just so many opportunities down here. Not only just with the studio executives that have moved down here, but also in the independent world. Because I think, you know, since we're kind of seeing the same thing, one thing after the other, story-wise at the box office, is what has propelled the indie market to kind of boom in a way, because, you know, people don't always want to see the superhero movie. Sometimes they want to see the dark and twisted stuff. So we're definitely cashing in on that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of my friends fall in that category. So, so how do you feel? So then if you've both been here about three years, then tell me more about your take on the industry in Atlanta. You just started there, but tell me a little bit more. What do you see coming up in the future? Because I know there was a time back in like 80s, early 90s, Atlanta was big film movies, and it seemed to kind of waver a little bit, and then, I don't know, maybe 10 years sort of come back with a vengeance. I know when I think it might have been around 2008 or 9, I was at the studios, the Redown Studios on 17th, 14th Street, where I was in the gallery or the audience for one of the first tapings of Swift Justice with Nancy Grace. And they were talking about how, people had come here too. The L.A. people came down and built nicer studios there. Or because they had nicer studios, people wanted to come there here to Atlanta and work because we have nice things. We have great settings. I mean, you can get to a beach, mountains, any kind of setting you want, indoors or outdoors, and that it would be easier to work and cost less.
Yeah, it's a lot cheaper too. That's one thing. One thing is I noticed there's definitely a lot of people from LA and New York that are moving down here, and that's great for us because we can learn from them and see how they do it. As for actors, what I've noticed when I've still been on set that on the network shows, they're still bringing even for, you know, one-liners. Sometimes they're still flying people down from L.A. So it's almost as though they're not trusting or they don't have I think it's getting better now, but I think they need to get more confidence in the Atlanta people, so the natives.
Yeah, I think so. And I think so many people and so many shows are making that happen, actually. All right, well, just so you know, if you're listening, if you've just tuned in here to Madam Perry Salon, I'm glad that you're here. And I'm delighted to have Edward Reed and Madeline Pearson here with me, and we're going to talk about their new project. If you want to, would you lighten up Jack Kopecky? And if you want to call in and ask them a question, the number is 646-716-9922. Blog Talk Radio assures me that that's a toll-free call from anywhere in the continental U.S. And, guys, we're about to ask you about Jack Kopecky, but we do have a caller here for you. Are you ready?
Yeah.
We are ready.
Edward, all right. Hey, hi, and welcome to Madam Perry Salon. Who do we have here?
Hi, this is Bill Burns.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, Bill.
Hey there.
Hi, how are you?
Glad to hear from you.
Good. Thanks for calling.
Good. Hey, I've got a question. I live here in Atlanta, and I've been doing a lot of extra work, but I've noticed Mr. Reed. Is it Mr. Reed?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Reed. I've noticed a lot of work you've done, and it looks like you've been pretty successful. You have a lot of Facebook followers and stuff, and one of the series that I really like that you've done, the Jack Kopecky, is that right? Is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah, Jack Kopecky, yeah.
Yeah, Jack Kopecky. I really like that, but I also like the one that you did, The Grand Prince of Moscow. I thought that was absolutely the funniest thing. And my question is, how did you get involved in this business to become so successful? Because it seems like you just started this by yourself and sort of built it, and it keeps going and going and going. Do you just keep writing different things, or do you have people helping you? What do you do?
Well, for the first three, that was just me writing, and it came to the point, that's why it's great to have Madeline as a co-writer, because like you're saying, you got so much going on, and I have so many scripts going so many different places, and she's the practical one that keeps me down. But yeah, The Grand Prince of Moscow, it was just what I did as an extra is I was able to get a couple of people and shoot a teaser for it, and that was about 3 or 4 minutes, and that's where it really gained its popularity and got its following. And then I was contacted by a few different people about investing into the show and making a pilot. And that I was working with Kevin Cole too, who's a really great guy and very creative. And it exploded from there. And now it's got distribution overseas, which is great too. So, and then I just kept writing. I think once you're on a roll, you keep going.
Well, I'm really excited to see what you guys come up with. It just sort of makes my heart sing seeing people from local Atlanta making it in this business. Because, it's almost like we're sort of cast down as second place citizens because of the LA scene and everything. And I think we're becoming more of a industry dominating force compared to what this industry was 2 years ago. And I just wish you guys the very best.
Well, thank you for calling.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you so much. That was very validating.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you so much, Bill. All right. Bye.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Oh,
so that's for every extra.
Bill Burns.
Just write a teaser and get 5 minutes and get it popular and find investors. That's the three-step method.
That's right.
No, I think what we're really trying to do is even starting with The Grand Prince of Moscow is having a solid script, and then everything is top notch quality, the highest level that could be shown on the network, from Grand Prince of Moscow to 64 Over 8. So we're trying to make our mark here and say, we can do it. And we're having full cast, full crew, major production that we're working on. And we just continue to do it. And something's going to, distribution overseas is nice, but I think you just got to keep on keeping on. So
exactly. Never be satisfied. Always, always try to go for better and better quality.
And I think Bill had another good point there with the fact that, Atlanta, we are starting to get more respect. You know, and I think that has to do with the quality of work of everyone, you know, including, you know, like both of you and more people involved in the industry as a whole are giving us a much, much higher level of respect from the rest of the world, you know, whether it's just L.A., New York, wherever it is, Europe.
Right,
and,
right. I think there are some things when Atlanta was first starting out, we had some really low quality, some bad productions that were put out by locals doing their best. But now, you know, now we're in the market, now we're hitting it. I mean, we have a fantastic equipment and crew and everything coming out for Jack Kopecky. So this is anything to compete with something for the network. So we're excited.
Oh yeah, we are so lucky to be able to work with some of the most talented filmmakers we think that are here in the independent world. So we're very, very grateful for that.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about Jack Kopecky. Well, who wants to describe Jack Kopecky for me? Because I read the description and it's just, this is brilliant. So which one of you wants to tell the audience about it?
I'll maybe talk about Jack Kopecky, and then if she wants to expand a little bit more on the story. Jack Kopecky is a teacher, and he's also, she'll tell the story, but he's going through somewhat of a crisis in his life. He's also battling depression, which is one of the issues that I like to address. I did that in my last film as well. And he's also fighting alcoholism and addiction. So he's going through a really rough time in his life, and then comes this divorce. He sobers up, and he's questioning, you know, everything. And he's just one of those deep thinkers who got, Madeline will expand on the story, but everything goes wrong for him and one thing goes right. And that's going to hit on the end of the trailer. But we're trying to, at least in my opinion, if sometimes there's uncomfortable humor in dark comedy and addressing some of the, you know, the human condition, whether it be addiction or depression, we try and look at that, but we also try and drive some humor out of that. And I think we've done a rather good job with that, because you have to sometimes laugh at the terrible things that happen in life. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, definitely. Look at some of the greatest comedians had some of the most screwed up lives. So, you know, we definitely kind of, look up to people like that. It's, as far as the story, like Edward said, Jack can't really catch a break. Some of the things that you'll see in the trailer is that his lovely wife ends up being unfaithful in their marriage with no one other than his own psychiatrist. So obviously that's a huge stab in the back, and even more of a stab in the back, because said psychiatrist wears socks and sandals, and apparently his wife thinks hot. things like that. A lot of quirky characters in there. One of the other leads, Mona, is deathly, deathly afraid of vegetables, which I learned through research that is a real thing, and I thought one of our characters has to have that. She has to not have touched a carrot or a turnip in years. So there has to be a reason, you know, for that. So her backstory on that is interesting.
right. We have his father. He's dealing with kind of issues because his father passed away, and his father was a mannequin assembler at R.C. Snowman. And he had this second life where he kind of
talked
to mannequins. He had a second family, a family of mannequins. And he's dealing with that, and his mother thinks that the father passed away of a gluten overdose, and really it was, the autopsy
Percocet
report shows something different. Yeah, Percocet and vodka. So
this is so funny. And not to take away, but just would you mind if I read the short blurb that you gave me about the Lighten Up Jack Opeki?
Sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Are you both sure? I mean, I want to make sure everybody's in agreement on this.
Oh,
all
yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
All right. Just to make sure we don't leave out any kind of, because you did, Madeline, you did add in the extra thing about the vegetables, which I wasn't aware, which brought to mind to me, you know, I know there's a phobia for everything, really. What's the name of the phobia for vegetables, by the way? I'm sure you know.
You know what? I considered including that in our treatment, but I didn't because it's a very long word.
Okay. While you're looking that up, I also said that reminded me of the bit by comedian Jim Gaffigan when he says, you know, I hate when vegetarians want to tell you, well, I haven't had meat in, you know, 3 years. And I go, look, because, and my response is, I want to say, look, I haven't had a banana in 6 months, but you're going to hear me wagging on about it.
Right?
I mean, seriously. Okay, lighten up, Jack Opeki. You think your life sucks? For Jack Opeki, life is a series of disappointments at best. With his reputation torn to shreds, thanks to a fraudulent rape charge, a narcissistic ex-wife, and a backstabbing psychiatrist, downing a cocktail of Percocet and vodka never felt so tempting. That is, until he meets Mona Bertram. Mona is odd, Jack likes that, and it scares the hell out of him. Even worse, her 8-year-old and weirdly insightful is his brother, Ellery, reignites his passion to finish his children's book, The Beaver That Did. In a whirlwind of existentialist sock puppets, farmers markets, and 12-step programs, Jack rediscovers a part of himself he thought had died in this kooky pair. And just when it seems like his luck has changed for the better, fate strikes again in the form of city limits and llamas, and Jack struggles to preserve the tiny piece of sanity he has finally created. Now, how could you not love
it? Well, you read that. Great. So we're going to have to book you for that.
Oh, thanks. I'll have to work on the existentialist sock puppets before, but I think I'll make that my new phrase before I speak on the air. You know, instead of red leather, blue leather, it'll be existentialist sock puppets.
Yes.
I mean, there's so many options, you know, with sock puppets. I mean, it's just endless, so we had to have those.
Right.
Okay.
There's a surprise, too, the mannequins, the mannequin head. That's where the father's ashes are. We have a mannequin head for that. So it's
Are you guys fans of British comedy? Because this certainly reminds me of a lot of things I see in British comedies.
The very, very much so.
Okay.
I need to start watching.
Lately this week I bought the first season of Black Books by
Dylan
Moran and Grant Lund. Yeah.
I love Black Books. Oh my God, I love Black Books.
Madeline, I just knew it. I just had a feeling when you walked into the salon here.
Well, I'm missing out. I know I have to catch up with that.
I sent you clips of that. You're gonna have to go back and look.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I missed that.
Have you sent him the IT crowd as well? And see, Black Books, IT crowd, Mighty Boosh?
Oh, my God. The Mighty Boosh, that is my jam. There's just something about, personally, I love American comedy, but there's something so weird about British comedy that, you know, we don't get it here in America. So if we can be the Americans that are weird and, you know, bring some eccentric stuff, then that's good.
Yeah, when you're going on with the story and the puppets and the vegetable and ashes and the mannequin head, I'm thinking, my God, this woman really does write Black Books. I can tell she's involved in this. She's a writer.
Yeah, let me
I have a lot of homework.
Come on over here. We'll have a pajama party and watch them all night.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely need to catch up.
I've got vodka. You bring the vodka.
find the definite or the term for fear of vegetables, and I'm probably going to butcher it, but it is lichenophobia. It is from the Greek word lichenico, which means vegetable. So now everyone has been enlightened on that phobia.
Okay. See, it's entertainment and education, too. Edutainment,
yes,
right here.
Yeah. We can continue
yes
with our lives now.
Okay, so now, Jack Kopecky, I think you're making the trailer for it now, did you say?
Yes, we are.
All right, and then when and where are we able to see Lighten Up Jack Kopecky?
Well, we are actually going to be shooting it not this weekend. We're having our table read this weekend, but in about 2 weeks is when we'll be shooting it, pulling a couple of all-nighters, but it'll be worth it.
Yeah.
Oh.
So we're going to be doing that, and that's yeah. You'll have to be on the site and check out the behind the scenes. We're going to, of course, keep up with it. So you'll get to see all sorts of odd and unusual background pictures. So,
oh, believe me, I would love to. I would absolutely love to. So tell me more. So what, you know, you've got a lot of different issues going on in this film. Like I said, the mental health issues and addiction. What are you trying to portray in the 10 minutes in the trailer?
That's we're trying to get each little each aspect of Jack's life, starting with his confrontation with the wife and the psychiatrist, him having to move out, meeting with his and living with his mother and adopted Korean brother, and who's another character himself. Then we're gonna film scenes of a 12-step scene. We have that going. Then we have a scene in the bookstore, and we also have another character that's Jack's 12-step sponsor, who is has a split personality, and he's quite an interesting guy, and he's how would you say it, Madeline, about his religious.
Well, he's one of those people. He's a good guy at heart, but there's only so many times when you can hear someone say, "Oh, and this is what I believe." He is a very over the top self-proclaimed Christian, but he believes that he is in a Rastafarian army. So it just depends on what character you get on what day. We don't even know what the character is going to be whenever we film them. We're just going to have to see.
Yeah, because there's two of them. His name is Hal Ron, so he's got two names. And Jack never knows which one he's going to be.
All right.
It's going to be 10 minutes full of strange things, but we're trying to get the point across of exactly what he's dealing with, what his crisis is. Coming up to the end scene where he's now working in a bookstore, Lion of Judah bookstore for Saul Goldstein, and he meets his new employee, which is Mona, and her younger brother, Ellery, and they get to talking about beavers.
The kind, like, you know, in a zoo.
Right. Was out there making a dam.
Yeah,
books about beavers that save towns. Yeah,
brave beavers.
So, brave beavers.
Oh,
yeah.
Brave. Okay, all right.
Oh yeah.
Brave beavers, and
everyone has a passion, and that's Jack's.
Okay, and writing a children's book about the beaver that
the beaver. Yeah, saves the town from the flood, and. And that's kind of sparked some interest between him and the young man as well, and Mona. And they're both really off and a little bit odd, and there's a really good scene at the end that we have where they're bantering. And I think that's going to solidify the show right there at the very end.
Mm-hmm. Is there romance in here? Oh, go ahead.
Well, Edward, would you like to address that, or do you want me to first?
You can go ahead.
I am of the belief that you only need to include romance in the film if it's going to add to it. And I think that even though we call this a dark comedy, I would not call it a romantic comedy, simply because the story is about Jack. There may be a slight romantic thread in there, but the only reason that there is, if we decide on doing that, is to continue to show Jack's story and Jack's transformation. Mona essentially serves as a way for Jack to learn how to accept himself. And, you know, really, you cannot accept love from anyone, romantic, you know, friendship, anything, unless you're able to receive love from yourself first. So that's kind of the soapbox answer to that, amidst all the mannequins and beavers and vegetables and all that.
Whirlwind of existential sock puppets that they surround themselves with. So, yeah, she kind of brightens his life and gives him more of a spark, and he gets to discover himself more and maybe learn to love himself and see the world with a different eyes.
Mm-hmm. This is really
a beautiful story. Yeah. We're hoping. It's dark and twisted, but it is. I think when I write, I think there has to be some sort of meaning or purpose, and it has to touch the audience and in some way, whether uncomfortable or maybe even a little bit offensive. But if you're not really pulling something emotional out of the audience, I think you've lost a really good opportunity for a film, for a story.
I think, you know, despite all the strange things we have going on, I think the overarching theme will be very accessible and relatable to the audience, really, no matter what their own background is. So we just want, you know, everybody is Jack in a way. Everyone has a facet of Jack in themselves. So
I feel that I feel the soul of this picture now, lighting up Jack Papecki, that there is, because of all the obstacles in his life, I see the bit of soul coming through in it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or am I just myopic? I don't know.
No, that's exactly it. You nailed it. That's what we're trying to portray for this man, is there is purpose and there is meaning in life. Even though you've been beaten down, you can overcome your obstacles and learn to live in a different way. And we're excited about that, because that does touch most people. Most people do have some sort of existential crisis or questioning, or things go wrong. And in this story, we're trying to show how one man makes it through.
Mm-hmm. Madeline, you are, in addition to everything else you do, you're a member of an improv team. Are you still?
Oh, mm-hmm. I am at the University of North Georgia.
Okay. And how long have you done that? Been doing improv?
I've only been involved in it for about 2 years. It was really whenever I started first getting interested in acting and sort of coming out of my shell, because unlike with film, you know, where you have a script and you rehearse, improv, you don't know what's going to happen. It's impossible to rehearse for improv. So it was a very painful yet rewarding way for me to meet people and just have an excuse to act like an idiot on stage, pretty much.
Does that in any way serve or help or with your writing?
I think so, because, you know, whenever you are on stage, depending on what your improv partner gives you, you know, they give you a theme or a topic, you have no choice but to roll with it. We have a rule in improv, the improbable odds is the group, and I actually missed practice tonight. I told them, I'm sorry, I've got an interview. But it's good. I gave them a shout-out. But our rule is you have to say yes and. You're not allowed to disagree with someone's, you know, someone's idea. You just have to roll with it. So I think it's very much helped me in my writing. and even dealing with people in general, because life is sort of improv. You're kind of winging it sometimes. So it's a cool way to think about things.
What about when you're thinking about parts or somebody's actions? Does it help you to mentally sort of block out a scene from what you've been through or having certain situations? You know, when an improv is thrown at you, I mean, you may know what kind of situation you're doing, whether it's the audience throwing up suggestions or the things where you have to start every next line with the next letter of the alphabet. You know basically what's
mm-hmm.
happening, but you never know where it's going to go.
Exactly. And yeah, I mean, you know what the game is and what the idea of the game is, but yeah, there's really no way to prepare. If you attempt to prepare, you're kind of doing the opposite of what improv is.
So does this help you though? When I was thinking about when you're considering a scene for an actor, you know how they might twist or react to it, or how they might pivot depending on what's given to them. I think I just wanted to use pivot in the sentence, but that's all.
It's a fun word. It's a really satisfying word. For me, I've been really blessed to be able to work with a couple of upcoming directors who really allow their actors to add in a bit of improv into their scenes. You know, it might say in the script, you know, the actor says this line and then they walk over to the window. But if for some reason the actor just feels, you know, in the moment they don't need to be at the window, they need to be at the sink or they need to be making a cup of tea or something, the people I've worked with have been very open to that, because at the end of the day, if the actor can sort of follow their impulse, that's going to be a more believable performance. I mean, you know, we have film because we want to capture moments of humanity, basically. That's the difference between film and theater. Film is all about being intimate, and it's all about those little blinks and little movements. So I think if you can find a director who values improv, it's wonderful.
Oh, yeah. See there. Edward?
Yeah. Well, if I know if we're shooting a scene and something turns around and it's it makes it that, you know, that goes in, and luckily too we have a camera and we can take multiple takes too.
Mm-hmm.
So if it looks bad, we just cut it.
Oh yeah, that's a plus.
Yes, but sometimes it just flows and it's hilarious. That happened on 64 over 8. That happened on our other shows. And, you know, it's just added dialogue or taking the dialogue away in that moment. Something comes up, and it's perfect for that scene. So it's just capturing, you know, that art in, you know, in one scene.
Yeah, in comedy especially, I think improv can really shine. You know, when you're trying to make people laugh, because when you don't know what you're going to do next, it's funny.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been brought to tears with good improv, whether it's TV or at the Whole World Improv Theater. I mean, I've just been, you know, just broken down into tears because it was so funny, and you never expect, you don't see it coming. They didn't even see it coming, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's just such a gift. So it's like when in the early 90s, I had a cable show in Atlanta. And then a little bit later after that, I had a performance art group called Hysteric Glamour. And I would write the scripts sort of like Warhol. I have a beginning, middle, and end. And each character had their character definition. So they knew this is your personality of your character. And this is beginning, middle, and end. So you decide how you're going to get there. So I guess that was somewhat of an improv to get. They knew what the middle should be, what the end should be. How they approached it in their dialogue was up to them. And And I had people who were just so fantastic. You know, it was just like all you could do to keep character on stage, because they were always, you know, outdo my expectations. And especially when I get like a lot of drag queens or local rock musicians or whatever, people that are used to making things happen on stage, even when things go wrong.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, you have to learn to just roll with it, you know.
Now, let me ask Edward something else you've been doing, and this is a field I gotta say I am, and I know you look around here at the salon, you think of all the cushions and everything, you're thinking, oh, I could never imagine Madame Perry would really, really be a true crime aficionado.
Oh,
but I love to read true. You know, the way that what real people do when they're getting ready to kill somebody, you know, I don't care if you're in the big seven houses of publishers, their editors would say, oh, no, nobody will believe that. You can't write that. Well, what people really do is just insane. And you have been you've been acting. You've been doing some major starring acting on shows like Homicide Hunter for the ID Network, also Murder Calls on the ID Network.
Yes.
So please tell me about that. I'm fascinated with this.
Yeah. Homicide Hunter, I actually played the victim, which was not, I don't know if you would say he's not the brightest guy, but he was moving into a house and a lot of dialogue with his wife, and he finds a grenade and he pulls the pin out, and that's, you know, and he blows up. And that's not really heavy duty true crime where you see, you know, the murder, but the second role I play this guy in Murder called Jesse James Kilgore. And he is just a monster. He's actually in some incestuous relationships, and he ends up in killing his girlfriend, which is actually his daughter, and her boyfriend, dragging the bodies, throwing the bodies down into the. I know it's kind of sick, but if you're into true crime. He throws the bodies in the water. Of course, he doesn't get away with it, but it was a really amazing opportunity to portray someone evil. And, it's a real feeling when you're holding a gun to two people who are screaming to not kill me. And, you know, your role is to shoot them. And, I was really, really grateful to get such an evil role, and I really worked with that. And hopefully, I was told this is good. Murder Calls was a newer show, and they were trying to pitch it to get it on ID, and they said that the episode that I was in was the one that got them on. So hopefully I did something
that is
right.
So exciting. Yeah.
That's awesome. Exciting. I mean, because I watch the ID channel, and I look at it on YouTube, you know, a lot. They put the shows on there as well.
Yeah. I'm, and one thing about me, too, is I used to be really fascinated with true crime, and I still watch Forensic Files. And I watch anything that has to do with forensic fascinates me. So, but, yeah, I used to be obsessed with reading about that and wondering why the mind could do such horrible things, you know, Ed Gein and Ted Bundy and all these terrible people. So,
oh, yeah.
Oh,
Richard Gere,
I think
that's
my personal favorite.
Yes. I've read everything Anne Rule ever wrote. And then
Woman
that I consider acolyte, Diane Fanning and Catherine Casey, I've had both of them on the show before.
Okay. And wasn't it Anne Rule was actually working with Ted Bundy on at a call center or something? Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. See it? I mean, it's right there. I was telling my, because there was one story, and I don't know if this is one of the books that they wrote, where a woman's trying to kill her husband, and you know, she and the woman next door that she's fallen in love with, they try everything to kill him, like putting a venom sack from a spider into this blueberry pie. The guy eats the whole thing, and the pushes that aside. He goes. This I don't know what this is, but I don't think that was supposed to be in there. You know, it's like everything that they tried, like they make this poison milkshake. You know, that milkshake, you might want to check the date on that milk because I've been a little dizzy all day. It's like everything was like almost a black comedy with that, you know, until they finally just beat the heck out of him.
That's a great idea for a film. I don't think they've ever – I don't know if they've done something like that where they just continuously try to kill the guy with every – possible way and everything goes wrong
Thank
and they
you,
just can't
Billy.
Kill them. And
you know,
at the
you start
end,
to feel sorry.
You know, those two that die.
Well, you feel for this man and then you think, has he not caught on by now? His wife can't be that bad of a cook. You know, he should be
right.
Catching on to him by now. I don't know.
Right.
But, yeah, so this is so exciting, though. But now when you get this part, though, to play the killer, now, the other one where you played the character Esteban Mestiz in Homicide Hunter, if you pull the pin on the grenade, I know there's got to be more to the story to make it an actual true crime story than just somebody go, hey, wonder what this does, and, you know, this is how they do it on TV, and pull a pen. But to play the character Jesse James Kilgore, real-life, sick, twisted criminal, when you get the part, and even further, when you know that, your part in this show helps sell the series, do you feel that your acting skills are what did it? Do you feel validated and concerned with your acting skills? Or do you think, is there a part of me so sick and twisted that I was really good, too good at playing this? Just a question.
I don't know. It was the director actually is the one who wrote me and told me about that, that's the show that did it. And I think it was just completely detaching myself from me and becoming, as pure evil as I could possibly be in that role. And putting I know the girl who I was trying to shoot said she couldn't even look into my eyes, which is good for my acting. Because she was too scared. She was too scared of me in reality. So I was scaring people on set. So that shows something good. And it was nice. Like I said, it was nice to play that role. And I don't think hopefully there's nothing evil in me, but when you detach yourself and become that evil person, you can do it if you're a true actor, I think.
Well, you know, I've heard or read or heard sometimes people are best at, or so good, so successful at playing a character opposite their true nature. You know, like the
right.
people that you think are so wonderful on a show, they could be a real jerk, and if you meet them in person, you think, oh, I shouldn't have met them. I should have just loved them from afar, and vice versa. So, or maybe I think I'll just go back to my original statement. I think it's just the high quality of your acting skill. But I think that's pretty exciting stuff. Madeline and I both do, that you're on the show.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it should come out, I think, in late January. It'll be on Investigation Discovery.
That is awesome.
So, just a couple weeks. It's called Murder Calls. So.
All right. Well, is there anything, as we start to wind down the show here, is there anything special that you each want to share about what you're doing, what we need to watch for coming up? And if you're listening, I've got a few minutes left. You can call 646-716-9922 to speak to Madeline Pearson and Edward Reed. And I will also have, because they're going to give me all kind of links, I will also have links to their websites and where you can see and learn about all of their work on the Facebook page for Madame Perry Salon and everything else I can put it on in social media so that you'll know about it. So anything you each want to share that's coming up?
Madeline?
Although Edward has worked on some really, really, successful projects in the past, right now all of our energy is being put into this teaser and really making it as best as we possibly can with the resources and budget that we've been allotted. Just sticking around for that, liking the Facebook page and, looking for updates. We try to kind of give quotes and snapshots from each character to just, kind of keep it interesting. I think it's more fun to hear a quote from a character's deceased father instead of just saying, well, we took some pictures today. we just, for everyone who's already liked, Vassalov Entertainment and the page for Lighting Up Jack Kopecky, we just really appreciate it because I know everyone's kind of bombarded all the time by, please like this, please like this. And so for the people who've taken the time to do it, we can't say thank you enough.
Yeah, very grateful. And I'm definitely grateful too. I know that, a lot of the same people who've followed my work since The Grand Prince of Moscow have continued to support me and contact me and encourage me and has really kept me going because a lot of people in this community, even, some of the extras that I started or background that I started with are still close in my life. It's just been, of course there's sometimes the bad stuff, but I'm really grateful to the core group of people that have been supporting us and allowing us to do this. I know one of the guys I'd like to thank is Carl Pitts. He's our executive producer, and Michael Cam as well. They've been really, really helpful in making this project become real. So.
Yeah, they've definitely been a driving force behind it.
So we expect to see, we're looking forward to lighting up Jack Kopecky. Also a lot more quality entertainment from Vazloff. And you guys, I'm just so grateful to have you on the show. I know you're awfully busy, and I know you're doing great work, and thank you so much for taking time to come to Madame Perry Salon tonight. I hope you'll both return.
Oh, yes, yes, once we finish this up, and that would be great.
If you
right,
still
great.
Got the same purple pillow, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be yours.
I'm going to put my name on it.
No vegetables, though, please.
No,
absolutely
no,
not.
Not even,
please, no.
Not even vegetable oil, okay? Not even.
No.
Yeah,
no. We have to draw the line somewhere.
Not even a pineapple on in the any decorative motif.
No.
Not
thank you
no,
for
no,
your
no.
generosity.
I'm grateful for. I love my guests. I really do. Your comfort is essential. So I hope you'll be back soon. And everyone, I'll be putting up links to all of their work so you can go and enjoy it yourself.
Right.
Just so glad I met you both. And best of luck with everything you do. And don't forget, Edward Reed, Madeline Pearson, thank you for being here. Madison. See, I get back to that existentialist vegetable stock puppet. Thank you for being here in Madame Perry Salon. We love you.